For February 20th, 2015, we talk about that Peter Molyneux interview, Sunless Sea, and we hold a free play multiplayer. Welcome to the 94th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. As you hear or don't hear, we don't have Dennis with us, and Jala was unable to fill in. So we're rocking at the three style.
Insert DJ music.
DJ music.
Yeah, I don't know.
Any kind of music that a DJ plays is DJ music, right?
Yeah, so, we'll go with that. Yeah. I was thinking of the soundtrack from DJ Hero, like anything from that, but yeah.
That terrible mix between, Loser and Slim Shady.
A lot of Daft Punk, which wasn't bad. But
oh,
then,
yeah, that was fine.
Yeah. But then they had, like, Cars in there.
Yeah, like any of the mix of like guitar oriented rock with hip hop, just like give me the crazy DJ Shadow mixes and stuff. Like that was yeah. Good. I enjoyed that.
DJ Shadow, man, it's like, well, all right.
He passed, right?
No, he's awesome. I love DJ Shadow.
Okay, cool. Now, well, like, now it was DJ AM who passed. There we go.
Oh, passed away. I see what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Not that I have any affection for DJ AM. That was the same year that Heath Ledger died, right? It was like Heath Ledger and Brittany Murphy. Like they all died in their New York apartments of overdoses mysteriously, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. 2009, that was a weird year.
It's always a bummer when someone dies of like an OD in a New York apartment, man. Philip Seymour Hoffman too.
Fuck.
Yeah.
If they die of an OD anywhere else, it's totally cool. But in a New York apartment,
yeah. It's kind of like Disneyland. If they see somebody, you know, keeling over because of a heart attack, they'll load them up onto a Mickey Mobile and they just dump them outside.
Oh, you're ruining the magic, dying man or woman.
Only men can die. Yeah.
It's actually part of magic. Women cannot die in Disney. Yes.
Because of a spooky curse. Yeah.
That would be a spooky curse. Evil stepmother, you are free from heart attacks.
So Disneyland just becomes this place where all women go to live eternally. It turns into the Nicolas Cage remake of The Wicker Man.
Oh, we've gotten to some
Cage
dark
dresses
here.
Up in a Mickey Mouse costume and just starts, you know, drop kicking
punching
you.
Women.
Oh man, I one of my saddest moments ever was at Disney World. Do you guys want to hear the story?
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah, well, you know, just I'm out there enjoying my day, and my parents, they buy me what I only assume was a $6 Nestle Crunch ice cream bar. And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm gonna stand here by this fountain and like crazy look at this fountain and eat this ice cream bar. And then a seagull poops all down the front of me. just like lock and load. It might as well have been the seagull poop version of the elevator from The Shining. I was like, no. And even though I'm fairly certain that that no poop got on my delicious Nestle ice cream bar. Might as well have. So I think that might explain something about
your crippling fear of seagulls.
Yeah. Why do we have them in? Why do we have seagulls in parking lots here in Cincinnati? I don't get it.
Apparently, the reflection off the pavement looks like water to birds.
Oh yeah, and there are those ducks who land on the the parking lots, and they can't take off because they can only take off from water. So there are people who go around rescuing them. They put them in a car, take them to a nearby pond, and then they take. Yep.
have you seen the things with swim? Apparently like the solar panel? Like farms, whatever you call them out west.
Oh, they're frying the birds.
Yeah, like birds just fly over and just get cooked.
Yeah, that's like 30 minutes from my house.
Oh yeah, it's like New Vegas, Helios One, right?
Yeah, they made that in the video game before the actual thing got finished, but it's pretty much the same thing.
Huh.
Yeah.
Do they offer tours?
Yeah, for people who want to die, then they take them up to the top. And now,
it's the opposite of Disney World.
That's the one that's full of the go-kart, right?
Yeah, yeah, the ones who want to go to space.
Yeah, yes. Who doesn't?
Yeah, Final Frontier. They picked the 100 people who are going to go to Mars or compete to go to Mars.
Oh yeah, is that the one that's the one-way trip?
Mars One, yes.
Yeah,
they called it Mars One, short for one way. If so, that's kind of messed up. They probably did it because it's the first one. But
right.
They should have called it Mars Zero. Then you know,
it's the prototype.
Computer science indexing, whatever.
Off by one error. Yeah. Oh no. Oh man, I feel like we've goofed around the requisite amount, don't you?
Yeah, we've had the obligatory amount of banter.
Yes, we have. Okay, cool. All right,
banter is over.
Let me check that box, and
we're good. Okay, I actually did take an index card and write down banter checkbox. Yeah, so we have a show for you. You know, if you listening to this wasn't evidence enough, but we're going to do a little bit of news, a little bit of free play and multiplayer that I put out at the very, very last minute. We were talking to each other by the time I was like, oh, Dennis usually does this, doesn't he? So I'm sorry for the late notice, everybody. He says 3 days later. Then we're going to round out with the games we've been playing. Sound good?
Yeah.
Let's do this.
The brief.
It's time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. The news section of other podcasts would call this. Who wants to go first?
I'll do a short one.
Yeah.
That there's a reason for my phrasing. So The Order 1886 is coming out this week, and I'm kind of excited about it until I read a news story that there's apparently a leaked playthrough of the game online on YouTube, and the person who played it, it only took them about 5 hours to beat the game. Ooh. A little bit of a womp womp there. Yeah. A concession to this is they were sticking to Critical Path Johnny? Yeah, that's what they were doing. But and there could be possibly more amount of content there, but it is kind of disappointing that it's that short, especially because I don't know how extensive the multiplayer there is, if at all. But yeah.
Nor do I. So do we know if this was a developer playthrough? Is this somebody who kind of has their shit on lock, or is it?
The way the article is phrased is that it was leaked, so I assume that it was not a developer.
Okay.
And that it was some salacious individual who got a copy of the game.
Yeah.
They really need to start doing, like, differential pricing on games.
I agree. It gets a little bit, like, so down that road lies, like, what is the number of minutes of entertainment I get per dollar?
Yeah.
Which is a little, that's a little bit hinky. I don't know if I personally subscribe to that. What's crazy about this is now we'll never know if this hurts their sales. Right. So if this game underperforms, like, this is probably a really good, thing that people can point to. Right. As to like, hey, why this didn't sell? Because I mean, I would be scared off from buying this at full price if I was initially interested. It sounds like you're very much in that same boat, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I was prepared to go for it, but I mean, in any case, I'll check out a review before I buy. Yeah. Citing Force Unleashed for that, but but yeah, this does make me a little bit more hesitant for wanting to get it. So.
Were you, like, all in on Force Unleashed before you played it?
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like I've talked about this before, but yeah, I bought that game like, oh yeah, this game's going to be amazing. And then it was like, not. And then I was like, oh, I'm never going to buy a game without looking at the reviews beforehand.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I feel like there's a place for a 6 to 7, you know, like 6 to 8 hour game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, just, with a number of games that I played at completion, like, it'd be really good if there were more, like, big budget experiences that were like that. However, they almost have to charge full price in order to get that, you know, like, recoup that investment, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate, because because this is the reaction that people are going to have. Go ahead, David.
Well, yeah, I think it depends. Like, you know, when I would feel like when I was working a full-time job, I didn't worry about that nearly as much. But I feel like for someone that's like a student or, you know, anyone that's on a fairly limited budget, you know, you almost have to, you know, it would be very hard to justify a, a 5 to 6 hour game for
$60
for $60 if you're on a budget where you only buy one full price game, say, every month or every other month.
Right.
Yeah.
It is a bad purchase if you are time rich but cash poor.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. That seems like a thing.
Yeah. So this is a PS4 exclusive. Man, it kind of seems...
I didn't even know that.
I believe it is. I can do a quick check on that. I remember.
I think it is.
It featured very prominently in like the press conference circuit that was done around the PS4. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember, oh my gosh, that first trailer didn't have any of the werewolves. I was like, oh, this could be like really cool, like just old-timey dudes shooting each other, that's great. And then it turned out to be Gears of Werewolves, and it was like, I'm sorry, what was that you just said to me?
See, and for me, it's like, wait, not one, but two things I think are awesome?
Yeah. Yeah, so this is
speculative history and speculative creatures.
Speculative lycanthropy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Speculative.
Yeah, yep, sound it out. okay, yeah. So
Lucanthrope history.
Not going to be a title. Sorry, but
try harder.
No, just it doesn't scan. Okay, so this is developed by Ready at Dawn. Here's what's mm-hmm. crazy: this is Sony's B team, or at
Sony's
least
what?
Sony's B team, right? So they their previous kind of oeuvre is like the Daxter game for PSP. Like they make the PSP versions of big franchise games. So Daxter on PSP, and then also the two God of War kind of prequel games,
mm-hmm.
Ghost of Sparta, okay, and Chains of Olympus. So this is their first crack at the big show.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Well, then hopefully it's at least moderately successful.
I mean, you don't like to see a studio fail, but like, I'll be very curious. Like, in a weird way, this makes me more likely to play it. You know, when it eventually drops to, you know, be on PSN Plus or whatever. But I was never going to buy this at full price. But yeah, that actually makes this pretty attractive to me.
Yeah, I think it's important to stress, like, you shouldn't think there's a correlation between game length and quality. But there is a correlation between how much you should pay for a game and game length. Does that make sense?
Or, like, that factors into a personal calculus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's kind of crazy. So it's weird to me that there's a market for complete pre-release game playthroughs, especially for story-based games like this. So this probably wouldn't have hit the scene if somebody wasn't going to watch it. And it wouldn't have, you know, broken big as a story if there weren't people who were trying to find this, just, you know, seeking this out to watch it the whole way through.
Hmm.
Weirdly. So that's a headspace that I can't get into. Like, would you guys do that? Would you watch a full playthrough of this game and then be like, yep, I'm not going to play this?
I would probably watch a whole playthrough again of a game I knew I wasn't going to play.
Oh, yeah. I'm also a person who's really reluctant to watch Let's Plays, too, so...
I really enjoy Let's Plays, depending.
Right.
I really enjoy watching Let's Plays of games I have already played, just to see how another person plays it.
Yeah, or for commentary and stuff, but then, like, at that point, it becomes something else besides looking at game footage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. David, how about you?
Sure. It was discovered. Someone found out that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has said that the trademark on The Last Guardian has been abandoned.
Oh no!
Don't worry, however, this gets better.
Find out.
It gets better. Don't worry.
However, Sony has since come out and said that it was just a mistake. Apparently, apparently, they have to check in every so often with the trademark office and let them know that, you know, things are still on, and they didn't.
Ueda has a dead man switch.
Yes. Trademark office, it's on. Yeah.
Nobody's turned the lights on in your development office for 7 years. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, they it worked out so well for Duke Nukem Forever. So I mean,
Final Fantasy 13. This is crazy. So this might be the longest something's been in development, maybe.
Yeah. So the good thing is, although I don't know how much weight this carries, the head of their, I guess it's saying, Worldwide Studios has said that they'd make a announcement if they ever did cancel it.
Oh, cool. So no news is good news.
Right. We'll totally let you know if we trust, if we crush Merkel's dreams.
Yeah. I wonder what's going on with development, though. Like, are they making, like, a computer simulated model of the animal's brain before they can release the game, you know?
Well, especially because, like, neither of the previous two games were particularly long. You know, like, they were very detailed, you know, very, very artistic, but neither of them struck me as games that would necessarily need to have extremely long development times.
Yeah, especially because they put out Shadow of the Colossus, like, within, what, maybe 3 years? 3 or 4 years?
4 years. Ico was 2001, and then Shadow of the Colossus was 2005.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, so world detail would be the thing you would imagine would push a development cycle if they were continuing to just like slug away at this, right?
Right.
So that's the reason why like Grand Theft Auto games take, you know, 5-6 years in between, is because they're literally just churning on making those worlds as detailed as they are. Like, that's probably the longest justified development cycle that I can see outside of something that is like a Bethesda game. Right.
Yeah.
All that I can imagine is happening here is kind of this weird version of development hell where like Ueda left, but he's still staying on as a consultant for Sony.
Yes.
And he was kind of the person who was at the center of those previous two games. And maybe without guidance, maybe without somebody at the rudder, like they decided, oh, this concept that we came up with maybe wasn't actually very fun. Or like, oh, like there are fundamental problems with this thing and they don't want to come out and say, hey, here's what's up, until they actually have an idea of what the plan is. That is assuming that this thing has been, you know, on hiatus for some amount of time, right? Like that everything has stopped and moved backwards substantially. Like that is literally the only thing I can think of that would be that would explain this. Mm-hmm. With my limited insight into the way these things kind of work. It's just kind of like, oh, we made a mistake and we don't know how to fix it. So it's better just to be quiet than to draw attention to it. Because, you know, if we keep stringing people along, they're going to get more pissed off than if they just think, huh, that game that I really want hasn't come out yet.
It's like the Valve approach.
Yeah. Which, yeah. we get a story about Half-Life 3, like in earnest on major, you know, news sites, like once every 8 months, I think. Like there's like a little rumor and then it dies down. Like, you know, Valve will say, hey, we have some kind of announcement. It's like, oh, what if it's Half-Life 3, but it'll probably be Dota. And then it's Dota because that makes them all the money. Yeah. Yeah. You were going to say something, David.
Oh, the thing is, though, that I agree that makes sense. That seems like the most likely thing. But unfortunately, that's not the type of scenario that I see leading to eventually a satisfying game.
Right.
Huh.
Cue the Price is Right music.
I don't know. I feel like that's a death knell. I don't want to ring that bell because you know, like, I would feel terrible if the next day it was like, oh, I'm sorry, guys, we're canceled. I'm like, well, fuck. Speaking of overpromising and underdelivering, in opposition to underpromising and underdelivering, did you guys see that crazy interview with Peter Molyneux?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was this kind of announcement, this kind of contrite video, where Peter Molyneux, noted, some would call him a flim-flam artist, a huckster. You know, let's go with flim-flam artist.
Flim-flammer.
Yeah, a music man-esque ne'er-do-well. There we go. Kind of came out with a video saying, hey, I'm giving up the reins of Goddess, whatever that is, the game that his Studio 22 Cans moved on to after Curiosity. What's in the box?
What's in the box? I'm glad that's what you thought the name was, too.
sorry, I need to recenter after that dumb goof I made. We know that there are a bunch of things that we promised in the Kickstarter, but you know, we're just kind of gonna let this one sunset, work on solidifying the features that are here in the game that is in existence. Probably not going to change too much to resemble what we kind of said was going to be the case during the Kickstarter, right? Coupled alongside that, there was kind of some interviews with the guy who won the Curiosity contest, mm-hmm. who was promised to be the god of gods, and get to get like royalty checks and stuff like that. Turns out, like, no calls were ever returned, and the game has never been in a position where this god of gods role could take place. So here, 2-3 years later, he's got nothing to show for the fact that he was, you know, the person who was lucky enough to tap that button. And so, and so this has gotten Peter Molyneux in a lot of trouble because of his, you know, his track record with things like this. You know, I don't know that I need to give the entire litany, but, he has a reputation, right? And so there's one kind of interview in particular, which was done by Rock Paper Shotgun, that was to my mind, overly aggressive. In terms of the questions that were laid out, like, would you say that you're a pathological liar? At one point, I think he even like asked if he has a genuine mental illness, like a very, I would call it borderline unprofessional interview. but that's just me. I've read other stuff from this writer, and he's okay. He's fine. This was not to my taste, to the point where he was pressing so hard. And Peter Molyneux was doing what Peter Molyneux do, which is
being a pathological liar.
Well, talking around it, right? And kind of coming off not as sympathetic, because, you know, like, people probably shouldn't give him, you know, their money. I don't know. It just, nobody came out looking good. And there were some revelations, right? Like, Peter Molyneux seems to have a very fundamental misunderstanding of, like, what doing a Kickstarter ought to mean, which is like, oh, you make a realistic projection about what this thing needs to, will cost to develop and create. And it turns out he did what a lot of developers do, which is, you know, used Kickstarter to kind of lowball the offer so that he would get the money. He made a point of repeating several times, if we asked for what this thing would take to develop, we would, you know, we would never reach that goal. And it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't have used Kickstarter then, because you've done what you always do, which is kind of promise this stuff and, you know, not worked within the limitations of the system. And here we are, or acknowledge like the realities that kind of go on around this. And so I think that's the biggest, you know, most salient thing around this, which is developers, like, don't use Kickstarter as a way to get further funding, because if that doesn't happen, you're going to be leaving a lot of very, you know, probably loyal fans holding the bag for the fact that you didn't know how to manage this project. And again, like, even this was turned around a little bit with the interviewer saying, like, you've been in this industry for 30 years, You should know how much it costs to make a video game, et cetera, et cetera. That's a little bit unrealistic, I think, because stuff always goes over budget, over time, et cetera, especially when, you know, this particular guy is involved, it seems. So, you know, even if you are saying this is malfeasance, this is like, none of this is news to anybody. I think that that's why this, speaks, irritates me just a little bit, which is like, people ought to know. And there's no use being a jerk to reveal this shocking truth that people kind of either know is like, yeah, that's just a fact of life, or
yeah,
are like in denial about. And you're probably not going to sway those people by being a meanie.
Yeah, you need some tact in your interview questions.
Which is,
I don't know. I mean, when you're interviewing a con man, I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure I have a lot of sympathy, but
I see the logic. I see the logic behind that, which is, you know, and indeed, if you are interviewing a con man and your thesis is like, this guy's word is worthless, and simultaneously I'm going to get him to hang himself by his own words, those two thoughts or notions or drives are kind of at odds with each other, right? So the strategy of, I'm going to take this guy out of his comfort zone because the system he's thrived under has been these softball questions for years and years and years. And people are going to say, oh, so where's multiplayer? And he's going to give some kind of flim-flam answer. The problem is, the answer was the same no matter what. Right? Because the basic question is still the same. I don't know. Like, am I being too kind to him?
I don't know. I don't have a problem with, I think an interviewer should directly confront someone like that. I don't know if the approach doesn't necessarily sound like it was effective or intelligent, but I don't see a problem with a very aggressive interview style that, confronts someone with, this situation.
Knowing just what you said, like, implying like somebody has a mental illness or something, like, that's almost as bad as what he's doing, you know, where it's like warping what's going on, probably. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if there's no basis for that sort of implication, then I would say that is a poor interview question, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the shame of this, to my mind, is that we're probably never going to get a direct interview with somebody who has worked with him.
Yeah, with someone who what?
With someone who has worked with Peter Molyneux.
Why do you say that?
I don't know, like, just either through professional courtesy, like, oh, I don't, you know, I am a junior developer and, you know, I either worked with him in the past or, you know, am currently working with him. If I'm currently working with him, probably not going to be given access to the press because, you know, this is a studio that is led by an auteur, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm somebody who used to work with him, I don't want to build up a reputation of being somebody who is a snitch, right?
A narc, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, it is a little bit of a breach of decorum, right? But I think that those are the people who have to, you know, cash the checks that he writes. That seems to be where the story is at, because like, oh, here's the reality of what happens when he opens his mouth, is a bunch of people have to scramble, you know, whether that's developers or whether that's people who run the books, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's where the story ought to come from, or the better version of it, because the case seems to be that he will talk circles around any direct line of inquiry, no matter how aggressive it is. And he's contrite. Like the follow up to this interview has been very much like, you know, kind of like, woe is me, just a little bit. Like,
sorry you got caught.
Yeah. It's like, well, all I ever wanted to do was make games, and it's too bad that people are attacking me for doing what I love, etc. Which is a little bit beside the point.
But the thing is, I don't know. I guess part of the thing for me is, you know, it seems like there's writers and you know, musicians and directors and stuff like that that will make movies that you look at. It's like, obviously this movie, like, they were trying to do something, you know, really out there, you know, really, you know, artistic or whatever, and they, you know, they couldn't quite back it up. Mm-hmm. And, like, I can understand that and respect that. These, but the Mole Nuke guy, his game's
I love that you're still calling him that.
Yes. His games, generally speaking, he claims that they're, you know, going to be that, and they end up just being very generic. I guess, to be fair, the only of his games I've played has been Fable, mm-hmm. which was just kind of a generic run-of-the-mill action RPG.
Right.
And it's a thing where it's the issue is, like for example, Skyrim. Like, I did not like that game. But I can at least respect that the reason I didn't like it is because they tried to make this dynamic, you know, living world, and it didn't work, in my opinion. Whereas Fable, they claimed they were going to do that, and then at some point decided, that's too hard, let's just, you know, slack.
Yeah. Oh, man, the run-up to Fable, like... These were both happening at the same time. The run-up to Fable and kind of the initial rumblings of Spore. Mm-hmm. And the fact that these ran kind of parallel and kind of tapered off into similar but distinctly different results. It's just, it's such a weird molting process for these kind of titans of game development from the early to mid-90s, right?
Like I feel like... what's the MMO? Tabula Rasa was had some similarities as well.
Who was that? Was that Garriott?
Yeah, the Ultima guy, Lord British.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, and then that was roughly concurrent with that as well. Like, I don't know, like there was some kind of fundamental shift either in the nature of the press. I don't know if it was the internet, but like the hype cycle, like I just there was something weird that shifted and broke, and the system under which these old guys thrived just went away. The floor came out from under them.
Yeah, I wonder if some of that was just kind of scale and sophistication of games.
Maybe.
Not to be like, oh man, you know, these old guys they suck compared to the new guys, but I just mean in terms of like it again, like the one I had most familiarity with was probably Tabula Rasa of those three. Mm-hmm. And you know, it very much seemed like this is a guy that like probably could have made a good game in today's environment or whatever, but just didn't understand the scale and, you know, those sorts of things that are in modern games. Does that make sense?
It might be like production value, like has an exponential effect, or, you know, like it's
right,
it's an exponential
yeah.
factor on kind of the complexity of the game ideas that they have in mind. So Molyneux's idea of like, oh, in Fable you can plant a tree and when you come back later it'll be there, like that is more complicated to execute on a full 3D environment as opposed to kind of when he was in his heyday, which was, you know, 2D PC games.
Yeah, right? Because you can do most of the stuff he said if you're willing to play like Dwarf Fortress.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look
another loading screen, yeah,
yep, yeah, and so like that might even just be the case, but like a lot of his game ideas that he talked about didn't seem like they'd be very fun, but I don't know.
Yeah, to me it's interesting because to me basically it seems like Elder Scrolls the more modern Elder Scrolls games seem to basically be what Fable was promised to be.
Yeah.
And at least a good deal of it.
That was even the case, like Morrowind came out in 2002, 2003, something like that. At the very least, you know, the fact that this came out on Xbox and was this big wide open world. I remember Morrowind and Fable kind of being unofficially set up against each other, right? Even though they're very different. And now with the benefit of hindsight, I can say, oh yeah, like Morrowind is such a better game. even though like I like Fable, I had a really good time when I played it because yeah, it's a dumb action RPG where the more bad stuff you do, you grow horns. Like, haha, I can walk around and fart. And if I fart for too long, I'll poop my pants. Even Fable 2, better pants pooping technology. Right?
We can rebuild it.
We can rebuild that yeah. butt.
And then compile it, yeah.
Compile that butt.
I'm just, like, I don't know. I would feel so much more comfortable if I, or so much less annoyed with him if I felt like he tried. Or you know, if I felt like the game showed. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The only thing, I mean, I know, like, a lot of games, every game, like, has to kind of hype itself whenever they're selling it.
Yeah. Right.
But the thing you mentioned about the guy winning the curiosity thing and then not being paid out for it, I feel like that's pretty terrible. Because, like, that's a game that people invest money in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it's set up that way, too, where it's, like, the way that you do better, quote-unquote, at that game is pay more money, you know?
Right.
And so I think that's really especially terrible because the game itself is not that great.
Yeah,
that's right. And yeah, and especially, you know, and that's kind of a similar thing. It's like the whole point of it was this was some supposedly art game, and then, you know, the payoff of all of it basically kind of fell through.
Well, the payoff was free publicity for Goddess,
right?
like that, like, make no mistake, that was the intended end result of that.
Right.
Man, what a mess. Like, it just kind of seems like the Peter principle, you know, somebody being just promoted to their level.
Someone
of incompetence.
Being a dick.
Multiplayer.
When people listen to that, it's going to go right to the multiplayer sound, which is what we play when we are going to talk about the listener interaction portion of the show. Sorry, I'm trying to keep this thing going. Keep it alive, guys. Keep the ball in the air.
Keep it popping. Keep it popping.
Keep it popping, yeah. So literally 40 minutes ago, I put out a call for a free play, which is where we have people ask us questions instead of, you know, people, you know, us asking you guys questions. And people
it turned out all right.
Yeah. We got a nice little turnout there. So I will go in and read Diego's here. Diego Abad asks, what music speaks to your soul, man? The Blues Brothers version of Soul Man. No, that's not the case. Yeah, music. I feel like I talk about music a lot, like on other shows, but not a whole terrible amount here.
You know, it ebbs and flows.
Yeah, it does. It does.
What music speaks to your soul, Cole?
I don't know. Like, this is a weird question. Like, is this like my favorite band? Like, okay, Acherville River, but like does that speak to my soul? Maybe a little bit. Huh. I don't know. The music that I listen to the most often is like ambient stuff, right?
Okay.
I've talked about this before. Like, I have listen to like video game soundtracks when I work, like the what's his name, the guy who did Sword and Sorcery, the Guthrie guy, Jim Guthrie. He has a whole bunch of stuff that is a very similar style to that.
Mm-hmm.
But that even extends beyond like soundtrack music into like Brian Eno's ambient stuff or some of the more chill trancey stuff that Aphex Twin has put out. Like, a bunch of that super moody, like, here's just some background atmosphere for you. Like, I would say that speaks to my soul by quieting it so I can actually hear myself think and, you know, write and focus on stuff. So I will say that.
Right on.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
I'll say beeps and boops, man. I like Rat-a-Tat. I like some MGMT. I like Caribou. So yeah, beeps and boops.
Beeps and boops. Caribou's great.
Yeah, dude, they're playing in LA next week, and I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to go to it or not.
That's pretty good.
Whatever.
Huh. I assume they'll come your way.
They will not.
No,
according to their current tour dates, at least.
How about you, Dave? I know that you're not a music man.
Yeah, I listen to extremely little music. I'm trying to listen to more, so if any of our viewers have suggestions, I'd love to hear them. recently I found a incredibly silly band called Conbro Chill that I've been enjoying just because I need more silliness in my life.
Is that Spanish for with bro chill?
Calm bro chill?
Oh, I thought it was con. Okay, sorry.
Con, yes, yeah, C-O-N.
Oh, con bro chill.
I was right.
Yeah, okay. Calm bro chill sounds like a pretty good name for an artist as well. But
no, con. C-O-N. But no, I listen to extremely little music, mainly because I have trouble concentrating if there's music playing, so I can't really do like the listen to music while I'm you know, at work or stuff like that.
I have the opposite problem where sometimes I need something ambient going on for me to be productive.
Yeah. Ben, do you work in an open office?
I do.
Okay. So do I.
Headphones.
It's the fucking worst, man.
Oh, that terrifies me.
It's like a library.
I don't like people walking around like in my peripheral vision or behind me or stuff like that. If that makes, like, when I'm trying to focus, stuff like that, that's really, really distracting to me.
Yeah. If I'm at my desk at the studio, what that means is I'm not working. I'm actually just kind of trying to interact with people. Like, you have to run to a corner if you're trying to actually do something.
Let's see. Luckily, is your studio hopefully like an octagon, so many people can go to a corner and get work done?
Oh, there are multiple corners, but no 90-degree angles, which is weird.
it's like DAP.
Yeah. Oh, weird. That is a joke for two people who listen to this. He's referring to the design, art, architecture, and planning building on the University of Cincinnati campus, which has a very non-traditional layout.
The outside guy who designed it purposely designs buildings to be unpleasant to be in.
Right. Which is
somebody
good.
Who cares little about construction costs.
Yes. Like, so the hack for that building, anybody who's visiting UC's campus, recognize that it's three buildings under one facade. And if you walk in a door on one side, don't count on being able to reach a room that is technically under the same roof without walking outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard one time the library, they built it, but they didn't take into account that the books needed to be in there, and the weight of the books caused it to sink, and that's why the floors are numbered weird.
This is a deep cut against UC people.
I feel like that is a common UC, not UC, a common college urban legend. I've heard it repeated elsewhere.
Oh, okay.
Although I heard it first on our campus.
I see.
Yes. Huh. Ben, what's Mike ask?
Mike asks, super general, but video game moments that gave you chills.
Super general is no match for general puzzles. General puzzles controls an army. You are foolish to try and stop him, super general. You are but one man.
I'll go for this one. I played the X-Files game for PlayStation 1, which was seven different CDs, and it was like at the time where they were using actual like video footage for games.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
FMV.
Yeah, that thing. But there was one moment, and in hindsight, it's, you know, just like a really silly like horror movie moment where like someone kind of jumps out of frame or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I literally like went dry mouth when it happened, and like, yeah, it was intense. That gave me chills.
Yeah. Bathtub scene, Silent Hill 3.
Mm-hmm. Which goes right back into mine, bathtub scene, Eternal Darkness.
Yes.
The moral of the story is never trust bathtubs.
Yes. Become as the chinchilla. You must clean yourself in dust. Oh, David, what's Jeff ask?
Jeff asks, favorite N64 game? I feel like for me, this one's actually a little tough because, like, even though I probably enjoy, like, more game, like, most of my favorite games are post-64, I feel like that was, like, my golden age for gaming. I don't know. I really loved Gauntlet Legends, and I really loved Smash Bros. Ocarina of Time was also good. There are so many games, that's hard to say.
I think you misunderstand.
I think I'd have to go with probably Gauntlet.
Okay. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, I compiled a list as well, so I don't have like a single favorite, but I have a lot that I think fondly of. So like GoldenEye was, I think, my favorite multiplayer game that everyone played. The game Battle Tanks was my favorite multiplayer game that nobody played.
Battle Tanks. Wow.
Do you remember
Battle Tanks.
It's like the post-apocalyptic one where instead of flags, you're capturing women. Do you remember?
Jesus. No.
That's the game. It's like,
well, yeah,
it's
because like the plot line is that I don't know why I know this. That like a plague wiped out most of the female population or whatever.
Yeah, and I think part of it was like people, they just, it was kind of like children and men. Instead of like them stop having children, they just stop having women. They just have men.
Right,
children.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. That whatever.
So if reproduction is pointless because the species is going to be out, you can only assume that they are taking them for spurious purposes.
Well, they occasionally have women, not real often. So, you know, you...
It's not like over. The road.
You need more at bats. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is no non awkward way to discuss this.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
We can move on.
Yes, we can.
Smash Bros. Of course is great. I really like the Mission Impossible game for the N64.
Oh,
that was another one that most people didn't play.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We did that on Abject Suffering.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
the only puzzle that I remember that I really, really like in that game is there's one mission where you try and get a helicopter to land, and then you enable magnets so that it can't take back off. But if you do it in reverse order and turn the magnet on first and then the spotlights, the helicopter crashes on the helipad, and that was always really satisfying.
Yeah.
And then the last one is Shadows of the Empire. That was the best Star Wars game for that generation, in my opinion.
Yeah. Better than Rebel Assault?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. So you're going to say Shadows of the Empire over Rogue Squadron?
Yes. Huh. I did not go deep into Rogue Squadron. I only played like the first mission.
Man, Rogue Squadron's great. It's one of those weird games that operates without the RAM expansion, but you kind of need the RAM expansion in order to like see what's happening.
Okay. I see.
Yeah, so that
otherwise it's a nearsighted flight simulator.
Yep. Yeah. David, did you say Perfect Dark?
I did not, and I was actually kicking myself.
Yeah, I was gonna say like you were all about that, dog. Like,
yeah, especially the multiplayer for that. I still think like a lot of like the way they handled bots and stuff like that was some of the most fun I've had in any multiplayer shooter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. I respect the spirit of Jeff's question, so I'm going to give one. That is Majora's Mask.
That's the game, even over Ocarina.
I've said this. I'm one of those trash humans who likes Majora's Mask better than Ocarina. I don't know that Majora's Mask is a better game, but Majora's Mask, like I said, it's my favorite. Yeah.
Are you going to get the one for 3DS?
Yeah, I just need to wait for a little bit of runway to clear, honestly.
That's honestly almost like making me want to figure out a way to get a 3DS.
Well, I was looking around. I thought about trading in my current 3DS. Just like, okay, GameStop will give me like $100 or something for it. Like just to get
actually, it's not bad
to get the new one. It was a special limited time thing. And Nintendo did what Molly do, which is. Which is manufacture like five of them and then throw it to the wolves. I didn't know like the system was going to be good until all the reviews came out. It's like, oh, it would be worth it to me to spend $100 to upgrade the system, right? To have the better 3D so I could actually use the 3D, to have the better battery life, all this stuff, you know, on and on and down the line. And then turns out I'm not able to get it because literally none of them exist.
Are any of the 3DSs, we're kind of tangenting, but I was actually wondering this. I was trying to check prices and then realize there's been like 80 different versions of the 3DS.
There have been three. Or, yeah, four. Yes.
Yeah. Are any of them functionally different? You know, this won't play some games or anything like that.
So the new one technically has a better processor, and there are going to be games like maybe Monster Hunter, maybe I know definitely Xenoblade Chronicles. Only the new one is going to be able to play it, but that is very unclear for now how that works. The new one also has two extra shoulder buttons, and it has a C-stick nub kind of thing for camera controls. Nice. And also like better 3D, which to me was worth an extra $100. Just like, yeah, let me upgrade this. That's fine. But turns out Nintendo doesn't want me to buy one. So, oh well. Ben, you were going to segue us away from something.
Well, no, I was just going to interject with something random as well.
Oh, that's fine.
I was just, the next time I buy a Fable game, I will think that my brain is saying Molly no, but my heart is saying Molly yes.
Attaboy. Truman G. Chambers, awesome name, Truman, thank you, asks, not exactly a video game related, but do you you might have talked about this before, but have any of you had any experience with Magic the Gathering or any other non-Hearthstone card game? Ben, you seem really likely to have a yes answer to this question.
I kind of have like an auxiliary answer for this. I play board games every week, and so the place that I go to also has people who play Magic as well. So I have seen it be played often, and then we will even play certain card games as well, but it's not as – they're typically not in the same vein as Magic. It's not like a – not really deck-building sorts of games, but it card games in other fashions. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's something that I've been interested in, but it's just – you know, it's kind of its – almost its whole own culture. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like starting to play like fighting games where it's, you can't exactly, I mean, unless you're just like playing real casually with friends, you can't exactly just casually start. Like, it, you know, it takes some time and some effort to get into it. I've just never been able to, you know, get together and do that.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be where the electronic versions of these games really step up and become like a really attractive thing, because I would never buy a Magic deck and like go down to a place where I have to talk with people and play this game. However, I might be interested enough in the mechanics to like give that a swing, and that's why Hearthstone, you know, works for me.
The thing I do find hilarious about Magic the Gathering is I remember when this was like, when Magic the Gathering was like the more panic thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then now, like, on campus, the Christian group I'm involved with, like, so many of the people play Magic. It's hilarious. It's like, yes, clearly it drove everyone to Satan.
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't know that until, you know, like, way later. For me, I think that I used up all of my card game points on Pokemon when I was 12.
Oh yeah, I did get into that. Yes.
Yeah. Like I went to like comic shops and the Toys R Us, and I think at one point I was like the Pokemaster of our Pokemon League, which meant I was just like the stupid kid who was there all the time. Like that was fun. Like I had a lot of fun playing that. I never won like a tournament. Like got the box of cards, but that was a good time, and that was the time and place for that. But I feel like I put, you know, too much money into it back when, you know, I didn't have any kind of income, and yeah. So like it never made sense to be like, oh, I'm going to throw more money into this thing that's going to require all this stuff of me. It's like, yeah, that's been a thing. Man, I love that Game Boy version of the Pokemon trading card game, though.
Yes.
That is
what they call it, the draft competitions they have, where you kind of, you know, build a deck on the fly. That seems to me like that probably takes a lot more skill, but it seems like from like a standpoint that would kind of be a fun way to get into it, because you know you're on a level playing field.
Yeah You don't have to, you know, have years and years of buying and searching this stuff out. Yeah,
I have all the Black Lotuses. Lodi,
is that a Black Pokemon? Lodi? Is that's a car, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool.
you automatically win if you have a Lotus Elise.
Yeah, all these fucking kids have bikes. Like, what's the deal, chumps? Yep. Oh, man. Ben, what's Brian ask us?
Brian says, want to go steady?
I like you, but I'm not sure I'm ready for the commitment.
I don't know. Insert some sort of Valentine's Day joke. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, man. David, what's Carlo?
Oh, okay. What I see that, how it is. You don't even ask me.
Yeah.
So Carlo says, how do you feel about RPG leveling up in every modern game? I personally don't like it unless it has unless it has story justification, like in Dark Souls in DMC. I actually really, really like it. I don't know, whatever like Puritan work ethic or like personality flaw it is in me that makes me incredibly easily brainwashed by like binging and gaining levels. I have it pretty hardcore.
Wait a minute, did you say binging instead of binging?
Yeah, yeah. There's a bing when you gain a level.
Dinging, okay.
Binging, dinging, clinging.
Yeah, when you're searching for what the next level is.
Yeah, ring and ding, dinging.
Yeah. Why did you just turn into like Dean Martin? Ding a ding ding.
I really like it. I think some of it's kind of just, you know, probably like, you know, dopamine hack, you know, reward thing. On the other hand, I feel like some games like Call of Duty, I legitimately like that, you know, it kind of forces me to use guns that I wouldn't otherwise use. In particular, you know, some of the weird things like some of the machine pistols that would sort of maybe not be strictly viable, but I'll use them to get points.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, like it's weird that that's still called RPG elements, as opposed to like I feel like that commingling has gone on for so long that they might as well just say, oh, character progression. Okay, cool. Like that makes sense, and I understand that is less catchy than saying RPG elements or whatever. Like, oh, it takes you got your peanut butter in my RPG. It's never going to fire now. How am I going to frag leet noobs? you know, I think it's generally a positive, and like where it gets wrong is when they're just like when it gets too complicated. So like think latter day Assassin's Creed, or even, you know, like what I understand the experience of, you know, playing like Far Cry 3 is, or Far Cry 4. Which is, you know, okay, you're trying to level up your bag, so here's this thing you have to go after. I like a simpler version where it kind of expands your loops and expands, you know, the verbs that are available to you in kind of like a really steady way. Otherwise, I think that there are a lot of games that really ought to kind of just trade on player knowledge and skill as opposed to character knowledge and skill, which is something that I think, you know, like platinum games do really well. Even though they do have their own kind of simple forms of progression too.
Sure. It'd be interesting to see. I wonder, well, I don't know, see or speculate or whatever. I wonder if some of the roguelike stuff is a little bit a reaction to some of this, where it's, you know, pushing more towards player skill as opposed to, you know, leveling.
Maybe. But there are, you know, roguelikes that have leveling and stuff now.
That's true. That's true. Something to kind of build off what you said. You mentioned, you know, expanding your verbs. So I do think that's one thing that some of them, kind of like some of the Assassin's Creeds and some of Far Cry does, is where it can kind of ease you into the mechanics. Yeah. So I do think it can be like a learning tool that can maybe be useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would actually like reject a version of like Arkham City that was, well, you need to grapple around, you know, this much in order to, you know, get better. Like the way that hands out improvements to your ability to get around, I think is very measured and well designed in a way that like is not strictly RPG and more like, I don't know, again, measured and well designed. Ben, we haven't let you talk.
Yeah, so Okay, so I'll jump in with like the Arkham games and like Shadows of Mordor, where it's like that's one type of leveling up system where what's unlocked is like different abilities. But I think some of the problem with that is there's no tree structure to it. You know, it's kind of like a plane structure where everything you're unlocking is pretty much on the same level. And so kind of the impression I get from it is kind of everything's, I mean, it's okay, but nothing's really that important, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't get a sense of accomplishment from unlocking things, I think, in those games. Some people might have different opinions on that, maybe. Yeah. But I think games that do it good are Platinum games, as you mentioned, GTA. I think in both of those cases, leveling up is letting you access more of the world that you're in, mm-hmm. and in a fun way. Things like Far Cry, I think, do not exactly do it well. I think it's dependent upon the fun of the mechanics, where like what you're unlocking in like GTA is like the ability to parachute or something, which can be fun, whereas in Far Cry it's the ability to like trank somebody more times, which is you know, whatever.
Okay, so this is kind of a related question. I'm sorry to take you off of that point. You played more Watch Dogs than me. Like, you beat it. I was really turned off by the tech tree in that. I really wish that they had kind of doled those specific abilities out, as opposed to like over the course of the story, as opposed mm-hmm. to forcing me to choose what I thought was going to be relevant in this game that is like really, really wide open.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty unmemorable, yep. Because I don't remember the tech tree that well. I mean, I remember maybe a couple of the abilities, but yeah.
You were going to continue and say on the other side of those good examples.
Well, I was also going to mention some other good examples. Modern Warfare 2 is one I really like, where the unlocks are different abilities, and then the gameplay is that you use a combination of the abilities to try and achieve some sort of result. So it just kind of increases. But the fact that they limit the options you can use is, I think, the key point, because it gives you kind of more things to experiment with. But it's not like Arkham or Shadows of Mordor, where you just have like a whole bunch of lukewarm traits at the end of it. And then the last one I was going to mention, of course, is like Portal, which is like great game where there's no leveling up at all. What's happening instead is the difficulties leveling up and the puzzles leveling up, you know, and that's what, you know, like you're mentally leveling up. But, you know, like, I don't know, that's like the right way to do stuff. Dragon Age, I was going to mention as an example of another one that's not particularly great, where it's like all the traits are like OK, but it's very much like a dopamine engine sort of thing.
One I thought that was really, really poor and that is kind of surprising is Diablo 3. And I think this sort of goes into kind of what you're saying with the trees versus the tier Plains. System. Yeah. Whereas, you know, everything was just a flat, you know, unlock progression. And because of that, you'd be unlocking like, oh, you go 20% faster. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, say, like, you know, Diablo 2, where you have a tree, where if you spec the right way, it's like you go 300% faster.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Because they gave everyone every bonus, none of them could be enough to matter.
I think the, like, stats-driven system, like in Fallout or, like, Knights of the Old Republic is much more meaningful because, you know, like, you slowly put points in whatever you're interested in throughout the entire game, and then by the end of the game, you're an expert in that field. And I feel like that's a lot more meaningful than, you know, these simple one-offs.
Yeah. And I feel like this may be a moral failing on my part in terms of an instant gratification or whatever. If I'm in a Diablo or Dragon Age style tech tree, even like, you know, an action based one like Watch Dogs. There we go. And I have a choice between here is a new thing you can do or here is a marginal improvement to your ability to do something that you already do. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to go for the new thing you can do. So in the Diablo example, if I'm playing a wizard and I'm throwing fireballs and it's a choice between get 2% more damage on your fireballs and also like a lingering damage over time effect on that, or now you can throw lightning bolts, I'm always going to throw lightning bolts, even though like the right thing to do in a lot of cases will be get better at throwing fireballs, because new shiny things to do are always going to be the more fun thing for me, which, you know, is fun in the moment, but then later on when they expect you to have specialized in a lot of these places, again, like forcing you to make choices without a full breath of what the consequence of that is.
How do you play the Fallout games?
Like Fallout games, I kind of know a little bit what I'm going to like what I'm going to do. Like the duck feed standard, right? I think that like Fallout gets it right, because they almost take like a D&D style approach with the perks, which are just kind of the feats. And, you know, like I agonize over which one of those, you know, perks I'm going to take. And I'll probably look at like, okay, here's how I want this thing to go. And just, I think that the fact that most perks are available to you at most levels without an awful lot of prerequisites makes it a lot easier to kind of like steer, because each step forward is enough of an appreciable step that if you take, you know, steady improvements to what you can already do, in terms of, you know, your perk or whatever skill points you allocate, like you're still going to reap an immediate benefit from that.
Yeah. So they do a good job by doing both of them, right? They have the perk system and they have the skill system. But how do you play the skill system then, Cole?
I kind of know roughly here's the weapon that I want to juice, and here is the here's the survival skill that I want to juice, and here is the kind of problem solving skill that I want to juice. And knowing those three priorities that I have, it's really easy to build around those. And then once I get those to a point where I am, you know, kind of solving the majority of the problems that I'm facing in that, then I can allocate to shore up any weaknesses that I've left over.
Okay. I think my personal playthrough of games like that is I always try and max intelligence and max all the skills just so you can see all the content of the game, or at least try to.
Yeah. And like Fallout, especially the 3D ones, makes it really easy because there are perks you can take that make it so that you either get more skill points from books, or, you know, if you take these things early on, it just means that it'll pay dividends a lot, you know, over the course of the entire game in terms of giving you more to work with.
That's actually something I don't like about it, is non-retroactive perks kind of annoy me.
Oh, yeah.
Just because, especially because, kind of what you say, they're often not fun, and I dislike being effectively forced to take non-fun perks early.
Yeah.
Particularly because usually in the early game, you don't have a lot of verbs.
Right.
But... I'm a big proponent. I think pretty much any system should either A, be a system where you can level up everything, or B, should allow respecs.
Yep, Dark Souls 2.
So I think it's the mathematician.
Respec?
Yep.
Huh.
There's a limited resource, like item pickups that you can get throughout the game that lets you go back and reallocate your skills and stuff, or your attribute points.
Nice.
Mm. Yeah. What were you saying, Ben?
So I think it's a mathematician me, but I like any game where there's like there is a way to like a best pathway, like there is a right answer in the game, you know. So like with like Fallout New Vegas, like the intelligence run of like starting out not leveling up and getting to the place where you can up your intelligence to 10, uh-huh, like to max your skill. I don't know, whatever. Yeah. I like that stuff.
Yeah, because in New Vegas, it's possible to max out all your skills and all your stats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that game so much.
Oh, yeah. I really hope that that's something we're going to get a sequel to soon.
I don't know. We talked about it last time, right? Bethesda has an announcement. I don't know that it's going to be Obsidian. But
Fallout Online.
Ugh, I don't want Fallout Online. I just want a new Fallout game.
But Elder Scrolls Online was so good that went free to play this week or last week.
That's the way that you make money in that game, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. David, you asked that question, so I'm going to have Ben ask Noah's.
Noah says, what's everyone's favorite beer, style, brand, whatever you feel like sharing?
Yeah.
I can go first.
Yeah, go ahead.
So typically, stout guy, and I really like chocolate stouts. I think my end-all, be-all beer is Southern Tier Chocolate, Chocolata, whatever. And Yeah, so pretty much any stout I like, but also on the other end of it, the only IPA I can drink is Dogfish Head, which is what I'm drinking tonight.
Oh, 60 or 90?
90.
Okay, that's my choice as well. You ever had a 120?
I have. I split it with two other people. It was intense.
As you do. As you do. My favorite beer is the it's a Dogfish Head Palo Santo Marone. Listeners of the show will remember in the episode Critical Path Johnny, when we were all in the same room, my Christmas gift to everybody was alcohol treats. And I got Dennis a 4-pack of that because it is a very powerful beer. I assume that he was like me and that he checks the percentages. Turns out he doesn't. he didn't realize that this nice, very powerful, kind of smoky, tastes like a porter slash stout, except it's an ale. Aged in a large vat made of the ancient and sacred Palo Santo tree from South America, is 14 to 15%. So he had two of them by the time I realized that he was kind of slurring and leaning on the table. I was like, "You might want to pump the brakes, dog." Yep. But that is really good. It is a rare treat for me because it is quite costly. But yes, I would say that is my favorite beer.
Sure. I'd say overall, I'm a little bit more of a cider guy. But probably like, I don't know, some of the wheat beers, some of the like Heffenweisers and Ambers and stuff like that. Probably what I drink. What?
Go so, on.
Sorry, the way you said Hefeweizen is really funny.
It's it's like Budweiser's version of Hefeweizen.
Hefeweizen. Blue Moon?
As you do.
I've seen probably, that sold as an import
probably what
before.
I drink but most often is the Hudepol, which is a local just like lager beer.
Yeah. Hudepol is Cincinnati. It's brewed, it's a sub label of Christian Moorline, which is kind of akin to the other brand would be Little Kings, like these Southern Ohio kind of things. Man, I would rock some Hudepol back like in college and afterwards because you could get a 12-pack for $7.50 at the corner store.
It's priced comparably to PBR, and I think it's a little bit higher quality, and it's, you know, local.
Yeah. So what's weird about that? Go ahead.
Ohio's answer to Yingling.
Yeah.
Very similar. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
See, I liked Hudepol a lot. Like that was basically that, and ibuprofen was my diet from 2000 from like 2010 to the end of the year in 2011.
I didn't actually eat food.
Sorry, Cole, we let you down.
That's fine. So what's weird is after I moved away, so I moved away and then I moved back to Cincinnati for my job, and I never had any Hudepol after that. And I think that it's because I stopped dipping.
Oh, I did not know you dipped.
Oh, I dipped all the time. It was really bad. But like the two of those were so indelibly linked that I think that when I quit one, I quit the other.
Mm.
Huh. I haven't dipped for 5 years, but,
I feel like that's the Mansfield influence.
Well, yeah, it was my friends from Mansfield that got me started on it, but I did most of it down here.
Is this Chalk and Co?
Chalk and Co. Yeah, it was a bunch of that. Also, my roommates at the time were all Mansfield people, and it was Nate again. All these deep cuts, people that only we know. Oh man, yeah. So Hootie's good. I might pick some of that up. I don't see it around, but I also don't look for it.
Kroger's.
Yeah. I was just there the other day. Let's see here. Brandon asks, French dip or Philly cheesesteak? Can I say neither? Okay, so I will say
you can, but I'll judge you.
Yeah, I will say Philly cheesesteak if only
aside.
If I can do a French dip without the dip part, like if it is just a tasty toasted roast beef sandwich with some Swiss cheese and stuff on it, that's pretty good. But I think in order for it to be a French dip, it needs to be dipped in what I think is boiled blood, and I don't want to do that. So, okay, so either a French dip without the au jus, or a Philly cheesesteak without the cheese, because I don't want to eat cheese. I don't want to eat cheese whiz.
All right. What kind of Philly steak are you having, man?
I don't know.
Yeah, that seems like a supplier problem.
That is the an according to Hoyle, Philly cheesesteak is made with cheese whiz.
Who's this according to?
I don't know. My experience with Philly cheesesteaks, and also and also late night reading Wikipedia about Philly cheesesteaks.
Even I am checking that now.
Yeah,
Penn Station does it right? They have actual cheese on it.
Cool. Yeah, I've never had a Penn Station one. How about you guys?
Philly cheesesteak, man. Yeah? That's an easy one, yeah.
Definitely. Oh, sorry, gone.
No, you go ahead.
Definitely French dip with copious amounts of the ow with of the sauce.
Yes.
I take my sauce rare.
Juice. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that really that name? Is that just a French way of saying juice?
Yep, the juice. With juice. Au jus is with juice. So moving on. David, what's David say?
David says, shamelessly copied from a post I made to BFSC. Have you ever played the Monster Hunter games? I'm playing the newest one on the 3DS and having a lot of fun. It's like a game full of Dark Souls boss fights with awesome-looking dinosaurs. I really, really want to play a Monster Hunter game. I loved Phantasy Star Online, and my understanding is it has a lot in common with that. But it's, you know, they now only make them on kind of the portable consoles and like the Wii's and stuff like that. So they've not come out on any consoles I own.
Hmm. How about you, Ben?
I have not heard of it and I have not played it, but it sounds cool.
Yeah. I played the first one that came out on PS2 back in like 2005. This was on PS2 when that was like first kind of starting to get, not first, but, you know, like PS2 as an online game. And I really liked how slow and deliberate and kind of the emphasis it placed on traps. But after that, no. And I never expected when I was playing it with the people that I worked with that it would become like the most popular game, at least in Japan. So it's kind of bizarre to see it kind of continuously being successful.
Hmm.
Yeah. So sorry if I don't have a satisfactory answer for that. Jeffrey Lawton asks, is this question too late? No. And Mikhail Christensen, what's Ben? Ben, what's Mikhail ask?
He says, what's your favorite Jay Leno joke?
Nah.
any joke about Jay Leno, I guess?
Yeah. His chin, it looked like a butt.
I don't know. I don't really care. I feel like it's easy to hate on Jay Leno, but it's just like, who cares?
He does mean-spirited comedy that acts like it's nice that our parents really like.
I guess I don't even know this because I don't watch any. I have not seen anything Jay Leno has done.
Yeah, he's an easy target for a reason.
I feel kind of bad with these sorts of questions just because, like, yeah, I don't think I've seen anything he's done since like high school.
Yeah. Like even when I was like younger, I was more of a Conan man than a Leno man. But
Conan the Barbarian.
Yes.
Some people don't see the parallels, but they're there.
No, but they're there. come to my shed. I have a lot of yarn to show you.
Those loose axes. Yeah.
Loose axes. Loose chin clefs. So thank you, everybody, for writing in and asking us these free play questions. Sorry about the last minute kind of notice on that, but sometimes that's the way she goes. If you would like to participate in these, we have a Facebook group. It is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Those generally go up on Tuesday afternoons, except when I screw up, and then it's Tuesday night. But you are watching those alerts anyway.
They were on top of it in any case.
Yes, you were. Thank you, everybody, for coming out.
The grind.
It is now time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing over the past week or so. Does anybody want to step up to volunteer to go first?
I can go first.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so I have one old and one new. I've continued playing Dragon Age. I started a rogue run through.
Okay.
And so I'm only like maybe 4 or 5 hours into it, but I haven't got to Skyhold, for those who know what that means. But yeah, it's fine. It's interesting just playing as a different type. I've found that it's a little bit easier this time, and I found that it's a lot easier to understand the story this time, because basically all the things that they're referencing the first time I was playing through and I had no idea what they were talking about, I know what they're talking about now. So when I can focus more on like the relationship between the Chantry, the Templars, and the I don't even remember the name anymore. Whatever.
The crazy magical, the Deventer Empire.
Yeah, basically the mages. So I can kind of focus on that more and kind of see what they're referencing. So that's been somewhat enjoyable. Yeah. But the new one that I've picked up is I started playing 80 Days because there was a post on the Level about how that was for free on the Android market earlier this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, David Petrucca said that sent that in. That 80 days was free for the Android for, I think, a single day is what they offered it for Amazon. But anyway, yeah, so I picked that up and played it, and it's fun. I really like the style, but for me, it is very stress inducing because I've made it halfway around the world, and I'm very hesitant about playing it any further because I'm running out of money, and I don't know what my characters are going to do when they run out of money. Yeah. So I'm very worried about that hypothetical situation from happening. So
okay, so here's where it gets difficult for me, like as an outsider who knows what happens.
Yeah.
And who also is really interested in you experiencing as much of this game as possible.
Okay.
Do you want me to tell you what happens when you run out of money?
Nope.
Or, okay. because I really don't want that to stop you.
Okay. I'll keep playing it. I will do it for you, Cole. And I will do it because I have faith in your love for this game and my possible love for this game. Okay. So, but I mean, so far, it's good. I like it. I like the aesthetic. It's very cute. And, yeah, I don't know. A British gentleman, man. That's an easy win for a video game character.
I suppose, yeah.
Phileas Hammerlock Fox. And Borderlands.
I still want Sir Hammerlock the game.
isn't that what the pre-sequel is?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think.
I'm not sure.
What route are you taking, Ben?
I'm going south right now, so I think I'm by Saudi Arabia, but whatever cities are there. I haven't gotten around that peninsula yet, though.
Yeah, so you're pretty still near the start.
I guess so.
Yeah.
And I'm like halfway out of money, so.
I mean, just so. Okay, so pro tip, don't pay too much attention to like your money, like there will be water if God wills it. The best way that you can do the best way that you can make that kind of a solved problem will be to like listen for tips about what you can buy and sell. And what's cool about that is if they say like, okay, you can buy this carpet here, and then trade it in, you know, for a handsome price later on, in such and such city. That is a good way to kind of like learn about potential paths. So they like seed different, you know, hints about where you should go next by putting those economic items. Things in. Yeah. So okay. So you can let that guide you to a certain extent as opposed to looking for like an optimal way. This is your first go?
Traveling salesman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is your first go, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah. So I guess what I would say is don't stress about running out of money and don't stress about not making it in 80 days.
I'm stressing about both those things, but okay.
That's your inclination. Like I stressed and then I had a lot more fun once I stopped because I recognized my first run, I'm probably going to fail and, you know, subsequent runs, I'm going to know a little bit more about how to approach this stuff.
Okay.
Well, I mean, to be fair, in the book, he fails, right?
I don't know. You know, this came up like several episodes ago and I never did any kind of research to determine that.
This is not a podcast for people who love books, David.
I say it every week, and I don't know why you keep insisting. I'm going to leave it in this time. I cut it out every other time, but stop trying to make us what we aren't. Accept us for what we are, David.
No, I'm just kidding.
We are not your paper dolls to shove into books as bookmarks. I will not live in your world. I live in my own. It is one of my own creation. Dad.
You're not my dad. Anyway. Yeah.
I can keep going if you want.
I was kind of waiting to see.
Go ahead, Ben.
That's all I've been playing.
Okay. I'm happy. So David, you have no choice now. And this seems tailor-made for you in a certain extent because of your love for speculative fiction and speculative lycanthropy and also anything related to crawling across. Yes, speculative giant spider cities that crawl across the desert.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, that seems promising. Yeah, I really need to pick this up. It looks like a great game. Did I tell you actually charted out to see, like, how hard would it be to do around the world in 80 days without using a airplane in today's world?
We've spoken of this.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I believe we talked about it last podcast, and it was super easy, right?
Yeah, it's relatively easy.
If you're willing to spend a lot of time in the hold of a boat,
you can do it like
right.
12
days, and you know, and then on a train, basically boat and train the whole way.
Yeah, not a lot of balloon travel happening.
No, I even looked for that, and I could not find anywhere that actually did like point to point balloon travel. I looked.
To an extent, you kind of can't, though, right?
I mean, you can.
I mean, you can try. Huh. Let's see here. So you talking about that makes me want to go back and try the North Pole run.
Oh.
Yeah. That just seems like not only am I going to go around the world in 80 days, but I'm also going to be the first person in the North Pole.
Yeah. So now, using geometry, is that also the South Pole run as well?
No. So it is literally, okay, if you consider going around the world to be, I have stepped across every possible longitude, then
I
yes.
I think of it as a great circle.
A great circle. So to your mind.
Not a pretty good circle, a great circle.
Okay, so a circle that extends across the widest possible circumference of a given angle around a spheroid body, right?
Correct. The intersection of a plane and a sphere of which the plane passes through the center of the sphere. Yes.
Right. So the idea is you go up and you circle the North Pole. You have walked over every single longitude and therefore you have gone around the world. However, it's really difficult, as you would imagine polar travel would be. Mm-hmm. Both times that I've attempted it, I have died shortly after Phileas Fogg, trying to claw our way through the tundra. Like it's really bleak and dark, and like it's awesome because you know you're just kind of taking these really rickety means of travel through these you know kind of like you know Norwegian towns. You know, with people who kind of are speaking in hushed tones about like people who have gone to the pole and not come back and stuff. So it really feels like you're venturing into this alien world. And kind of like a lot of the drama comes around when you get on an icebreaker that is, you know, that is heading up there. There's there's like politics on the ship that I've not been able to sort out that I think ultimately determine how successful you are. And so this is like, this came out, I think like 4 or 5 months after the main body of the game came out. It was like an expansion, you know, here's a new route around, and it is really, really difficult. So I kind of consider that I haven't beaten the game if I haven't done that yet, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome though.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That lines up real nicely because we're doing that game books episode of Watch Out for Fireballs here. And realizing that my game of the year 2014 was a CYOA of a certain extent or a game book is real kind of like, huh, that's kind of strange. Because that's what that is.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm happy you like it. I hope that you get over the stress and can enjoy it.
Thank you.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Sure. I tried some of the actual official release of Sunless Sea. I think it holds out really well. They replaced their initial combat system with kind of a real-time system that I can't say necessarily works real great, but it's a lot more fun. It's, you know, kind of just, you know, you keep an enemy in your light and you build up, like, what they call it, like, firing solution or whatever. And then when it gets maximum, you click the button to fire, so then you're trying to dodge the other guy's lights.
Okay.
Or just, like, basically, you want to be behind them is what it ends up being. So that's all right, but going around to the islands is and just kind of exploring is a lot of fun. I think one of my highlights so far is I got embroiled in a war on some island between the rats and the guinea pigs. So I decided to side with the rats and use my ship to just, like, mercilessly cut down the guinea pigs. So that was the thing.
I feel like I would have more of a response if I saw this going on. I don't know how to visualize this.
Well, the game presents it all in text, right? So you're kind of just presenting it. Like, in a lot of ways, it is a more, like, open and aimless version of 80 Days. At least the stuff about Sunless Sea that looks really good to me is the stuff that's kind of similar to that, which is, you know, individual storylines that you get into that, from my understanding, are separated by a lot of just kind of watching a ship chug along very, very slowly through a dark ocean.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And I would say they've kind of, I think, sort of shifted it in some of the later releases more to that, in that, they've basically taken out the ability to really do any reliable like trade routes, and they've made it so that the locations of islands randomizes each playthrough. So the end result is that the game now really emphasizes exploration and try just kind of going off and you know, exploring and, you know, making money by, you know, whatever windfalls and adventures you happen to have. So far it's been good. I've only I'm on my second captain. My first captain got killed by Mount Nomad, which is a giant moving island that chased my ship and destroyed it.
Like the oil puddle in Creepshow or Little Shop of Horrors, whatever. Yep.
Wait a minute. Okay, so your captain's your main character, right?
Right.
Like that's who you play as. How do you get a new one? I thought that this was like
it's
die.
It's a roguelike.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you just start again.
So basically, it's a roguelike, and then they sort of a little bit have a Rogue Legacy setting type of thing, except instead of being like permanent upgrades, it's when you're building your captain, you can, or when, you know, when you're playing the game, you can you know, spend resources towards, like, you know, writing a will or like stocking your ancestral home with heirlooms and stuff like that. And then those are passed on to your next captain. So, like, heirlooms are effectively just passing on money. Whereas, like, the will allows you to keep whatever lodgings you have. And then you also choose, like, what your relationship is to the captain. So you can be, like, their rival, their student, you know, their son, etc. So it's sort of an interesting system. It kind of fits with, you know, kind of their approach to, you know, sort of storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so far I haven't gotten real far into it, but it's a lot of fun so far.
Yeah.
The other thing I've been playing is on PlayStation Plus this month was Transistor.
Oh, yeah.
And I really, really like that. What was the previous one?
Bastion. This is Supergiant Games.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really liked the voiceover thing on Bastion, but that was pretty much the only thing I particularly liked.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think Cole's side job.
Huh? I'm not going to pretend that I'm as good as that guy.
So none of the gameplay I really liked that much. And this version is kind of interesting because the gameplay itself is actually even maybe a little bit more clunky, except that they sort of have like a VAT system.
It's turn-based. Thing.
Say that again?
It's turn-based.
Yeah, I mean, you can, you know, like in Fallout 3, you can play it real-time if you want to.
It's kind of codery.
What?
It's kind of like Kotor, a little bit.
I can't say I haven't played that.
Okay. My understanding, I've been meaning to set aside, like, just 5 hours so I can play that all in one go. What I don't want to do is, like, play the first half hour, get enamored of it, and then get distracted and put it down.
Sure. Basically, the way it works is you activate VATS or whatever they call it, and you have like an action bar, and each of your attacks takes a certain amount of time or a certain amount of bar, and then moving around also takes a certain amount of bar. But then the thing is, once you fill it up and activate, basically all of your events happen like at normal speed for you, super high speed for your enemies. So effectively they don't move. So you can literally just like run behind an enemy and backstab them.
Yeah.
And so it turns into more of a kind of more of a tactical game. And then, just like VATS, there's, a period of time where that needs to charge up. So far it's kind of fun. I would say to me, more the storytelling in the world is the real focus here. But I mean, it definitely works. It's fun. It's tactical, that sort of thing. It doesn't seem too difficult.
Yeah. How deep have you gotten into like the power combining?
Not particularly. One of its things is like each of your powers is associated with a person, and by using the power, either actually using it or using it to upgrade another power or using it as a passive, you basically unlock one of three bits of lore on that person.
Yeah.
So I've basically just been shifting around my powers to unlock all the lore.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I really like though the visual style is really, really neat. It's kind of, I mean, it's definitely, it's very Art Deco, but I feel like it's kind of Art Deco without beating you over the head with it.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like the type of game that like Art Deco is a talking point, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it doesn't lead with that by like a BioShock would.
Right. Exactly.
But it's like a combination between kind of like stately and ornate. If that
right.
makes any sense.
And also has it is kind of a cyberpunk setting, so it has a lot of the lots of things are made of light and sort of very much a some like computer enhanced kind of HUD sort of look to a lot of things.
Yeah, it's it's called Transistor because you're inside of a computer.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, like, and all of the people are .exes and stuff like that. Like, it's a little Tron-y. When I say you are a computer, it's not like that Fensler film where the guy tells the kid to stop doing all the downloading. But like that is a thing. Like everything is like subroutines and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I did not know that.
And some of that, I don't know, someone who actually programs, like, some of that's a little silly.
Oh yeah,
but on the whole, I think it's well done. I like the music is very, very well done, and I kind of like in this sort of game to some of what you talk about. It's, you know, just like in Bastion, they kind of do the ambient storytelling sort of thing.
Yeah.
A lot of it, instead of having the voiceover, basically your sword does a lot of the commentary, and your characters apparently had their voice stolen.
Right, you're a singer, like that's a part of the motivation.
Yeah,
yeah.
I do like there is actually a dedicated hum button that appears to have no effect, but other than, you know, making you hum.
I mean, just groove out. Like just stop and let the groove take you, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So one of my favorite things I think is really clever though is you can periodically like find news posts and then reply to the comment section. And it shows your character like self like editing / self censoring.
Oh, so she'll write a sentence and be like, no, and then back it up and write something
right.
else.
Right. And it's sort of a neat way to kind of effectively do like the inner monologue thing while still doing the ambient storytelling.
It's like the beginning and end of an episode of Doogie Howser.
Maybe.
And like, you know, he never misspoke or mistyped, like backed it up, at least as far as I remember, but continue, sorry.
Yeah, so I know. So yeah, I really, really enjoy the way they tell the story. Also, I think my favorite line so far in a game for a long time is at one point you proceed to find one of these terminals and order a seafood flatbread. At
Delicious.
Your sword's insistence, and then get like jumped and attacked. And once you defeat the guys, his like snappy one-liner is, "They let down their guard for seafood flatbread."
And this is not a long-term commercial.
Oh man, like a hush puppy would punish right now. How long has it been since this? Like, honestly, answer me. How long has it been since you've had a hush puppy?
I don't like hush puppies.
No?
No.
Probably within the last year somewhere.
The last year, wow. I would say
somewhere.
I would say like 5 years.
Ooh.
I know. Yeah. That French dip question is haunting me though.
Because you really want a French dip right now?
Yes.
Huh. So Transistor, like you're playing this on PS3?
PS4.
PS4, okay. I forgot that you had a PS4. It's pretty cool how your sword will talk to you through the controller, right?
I actually haven't enabled that. I probably should.
Yeah, I mean, might as well. It's a feature in the game.
It's not enabled by default. Therefore, like, I just kind of left it off because I wasn't quite sure what they were going to do with that. But now that I've kind of seen it, I think I'll probably enable that because, I mean, that does kind of fit with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of stupid. It's a gimmick, but whatever.
Yeah.
Doesn't take away
it's
from the experience.
It's an effective gimmick.
Yeah. Neat. Anything else about that?
No, I think that's it. It's just, it's very good.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I'm going to do the PS Plus thing as well. I didn't want to come in here with like, nope, I played Lords of the Fallen and read a shitload of Choose Your Own Adventure books. So I dug into a little bit of SteamWorld Dig.
Okay.
Which came out a little while ago. I'm going to try not to make it a habit of this. Like, Cole played a game for an hour before the show. just because I'm working very hard to get ahead on assignment play. Basically, Bloodborne is dictating my schedule, and I'm desperately trying to beat as much as I can before that so I don't have to manage anything else. Yes, I am planning a month and a half out. What did you expect? You know, bird got to fly, tiger got to hunt, etc.
Cole got a backlog.
I was going to say Cole got a plan, but okay. So yeah, SteamWorld Dig. This is a game that it was available on PS Plus. It is kind of a combination, like platformer, Metroid kind of thing, with like a little bit of Minecraft, right? So it's a dig. You are a robot farmer. Not farmer, a robot miner who stumbles across this town. And below this town is your Uncle Joe's old mine that you are trying to like unlock the mysteries of. Now, every time you play, this mine is randomized, and you have this, you know, pickaxe that you can upgrade that makes you more effective at going along. And the progress is kind of measured by reaching different levels at the bottom of it by finding these caves that will get you different like upgrades. So in the course of my session tonight, I got like speed boots that let me run and stuff like that. What's great about it is it's kind of set on this grid. Which means that, you know, as you're mining, it's a little bit like a chunkier Terraria or Starbound a little bit.
What do you mean by chunkier?
Chunkier, just like it is in Terraria and Starbound, the blocks are really small, whereas mm-hmm. in this, the blocks are roughly the size of your character. Yes, okay. Of course. Yeah. It is low grade sandpaper. But it's actually it's really cool because it's kind of establishing this loop that is really, I don't know, addicting is the wrong word, but like satisfying, which is, you know, you make little inroads and you go down and there, you know, kind of like not a lot of challenges. It's not like a combat focused game, but you collect as many, you know, minerals as you can while trying to do while trying to leave a path back up. And once you fill up your bag, you go up and you trade in your minerals for gold that you use to upgrade your, you know, your materials that let you get a little bit further the next time. And your resource, you know, that is kind of like constricting you a lot of the time is your light, right?
Is your what?
Your light. So you have a lantern that will burn out. You're just kind of making these inroads as you go down. You can get trapped like irrevocably, and there's like a self-destruct kind of feature that you can activate. But otherwise you have a like a wall jump kind of thing, almost like a Mega Man X or whatever. And, what's kind of great about it is you die and you pay a repair fee in order to come back and kind of continue the same run. But you have to get back to where you died in order to get, the majority of your resources back. So it's a little bit of a Dark Souls kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it's like it's a really simple game, in that regard, like, and I'm probably only saying that because I didn't unlock a lot of the special abilities. But even in the over the course of the time that I was playing, like, you could measure how much better you got at busting these blocks up in order to make progress, right? And so that is a relatively simple like hook that they can put in to drive you forward, where however frustrating it is to have to tap-a-tap-a-tap-a to get rid of one block, one upgrade cuts that in half, and you're like, oh, okay. So it's going to be throwing that kind of stuff at you.
Kind of reminds me of Did any of you ever play Super Mother Load?
No.
Did not.
Neither did I, but it's apparently a similar game.
So we're in agreement.
Yeah, reminds me of a game I never... but yeah. Stylistically, it's pretty cool, too. If you look at screenshots, I think SteamWorld is a franchise, maybe? I need to look this up. SteamWorld Dig, is that a thing? Developer doesn't have a wiki page, so I don't know. But it's a really good, it's a really appealing kind of cartoony style that has like very small holding lines, and mostly it's big shapes as it goes along, but a lot of like texture detail. It's really cool.
So what sort of punk would you say it is?
I would call it more of a Western punk.
Okay.
Yeah. It is wild, wild West punk. where Greg Kinnear, not Greg Kinnear, what's his name, is fighting somebody who doesn't have a
Kenneth
dick.
Branagh?
Kenneth Branagh doesn't have a dick, but it's Kevin Kline. Kevin Kline is fighting the guy who doesn't have a dick.
but he has breasts.
Does he? I forget.
He has the fake ones, okay. And there's that comical scene where Will Smith knows what breasts are made out of, but Kevin Kline doesn't.
And they're made of lady, right?
Such good writing.
Yep. Yeah, we've had a lot of Wild Wild West goofs over the past 6 months.
Not enough. Yeah.
Never enough. Yeah. So this is pretty cool. I'm kind of curious about it. Like, I started playing it on the PS4 because that's just kind of what I have it on. I think it's on Vita. It initially was out for 3DS. I would really rather play this on a portable because it would be much better to just kind of like make a run as opposed to sitting down at my PS4 and opening it up. So that's probably a thing that I might put off until I get a PS Vita or whatever, because this doesn't make sense for a console setting. It would even be better on PC, which I might have it because of a Humble Bundle, to like just fire this up in between meetings at work if I have downtime or whatever. But I don't know. It's cool, charming, has the base elements of like what I want in a platformer in terms of being very predictable about what you do and your abilities, and kind of empowering you on a very gradual slope. But I think that the PS4 is the wrong venue for it. Make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, very.
Guys want to button it up?
That was it?
That was it.
I don't think that's enough PSN love to fill the Dennis void.
We had two. We had two whole ones. So the game that I sat down to play was Apotheon, but mm-hmm. that just
Wait,
came
like
out.
The dog?
No.
What?
A Palomino? It's a pony. What are you talking about? No, Apotheon. That is that is the platformer kind of combat game that is in the style of kind of Greek and Minoan or Aegean vases. Vases?
Yeah, that looked interesting.
Amphora? Yeah, any of those. So by the time it downloaded, it was literally 10 minutes before I came here. And so I didn't want to do that to everybody. So, like,
you weren't playing it while we were talking?
No. I was
you need to multitask more.
I was looking at Greek. Honestly, I was looking at images of Greek vases because that is a delightful aesthetic. Yeah. So I'm going to ask again. Do you guys want to button it up?
It's not my call.
Let's let Dennis decide.
Text him. I don't.
Dennis, do you want to button it up?
Yeah.
Okay, this has gotten out of control.
Of silence.
Executive order. We're buttoning this up. That was level number 94. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Thank you so much to the people who responded to our multiplayer for responding in such short order. We love you guys. Thank you to the co-host for co-hosting. What else are we thankful for? You know, this season of thanks.
Family.
February. Our health? Yeah, that's good. Let's just get it rolling. Let's have a rap sesh about how beautiful it is to be alive. So thank you, everybody. I don't know what to tell you to do other than leave us a Facebook like, leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, all of those good things. And if you have any ideas about episode 100 or so, then let us know that. Miss anything, guys?
Dennis.
Yeah, if I miss Dennis. I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on Twitter.
Ben Merkel, and I'm at Merkelizer on Twitter.
What I love is that your insistence on going last has created this weird little, like, we're burning cycles by...
What do you mean?
No, because I'll go first.
We're burning bicycles?
Yes, we're burning bicycles. It is causing terrible pollution.
It's like burning books, except, you know, for people who hate hipsters.
Ben, we've reached peak Huffy, okay?
What do you mean?
No, not Huffy, like, oh, I'm in a Huff. I'm talking strictly
actual
Huffy,
bicycles
Huffy
that we're
bicycles.
Burning.
Peak Schwimm.
Yeah, peak Schwimmer. We've reached peak Schwimmer. No. But I'll go first, and generally Dennis will go second. Whoever is the wild card, like, everybody always has to ask, if Ben here and me not last, like, there's a whole, like, a bunch of routines that people have to go through. And yeah, though I agree with your insistence on it being uniform every time, and us yeah, having a very good, I don't want you to change, okay?
Yeah, no, like, patterns are the bread and butter of my life. I don't
preaching the choir, son.
Yeah.
Like that's that's perfectly fine.
Could you imagine an episode where I signed off first and you signed off last?
Oh man.
That hurts to think about.
Did we do that when I was too drunk to host?
I don't remember.
Nor do I. I was too drunk to host.
I think we imitated your voice.
Yes. I was too drunk to host, but not too drunk to perform ventriloquism. But I guess what I'm saying is it's always so strange because, you know, like the lineup shifts enough that like we can't say, okay, it's going to be Cole, Dennis, David, Ben. So everybody has to kind of second guess themselves. So you're going to hear that tiny imperceptible pause every time somebody.
So you're saying like over the course of 100 episodes, that's like a wasted minute or two.
I think so. Yeah.
Probably.
If you're fine with that. I mean, if you're fine with
it. You know, it happened. Yeah.
Over the course of 200 hours, losing 1 minute.
That's not too bad, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Think about the overtalk if there was an order.
Unix leap seconds.
Yeah, pretty much. Wait, is that going to fuck us? Like, is that going to be really bad this year?
I have no idea.
Unix leap seconds. People are talking.
What is that?
The guys in my survivalist group are saying that the leap second's going to be as bad as Y2K.
What?
It's where Unix adds an extra second to the year in order to balance stuff out because of weird ways that it calculates time.
They're too lazy. I don't know. For some reason, they don't just do like leap years or whatever. They literally will like randomly add seconds to the time.
Well, like Unix time is measured by 1973 plus a number of seconds, right?
Oh yeah. It's how many seconds from like. The establishment of Unix. Or
right, which is,
like
yeah, way to put yourself at the center of the universe, guys. You fucked us all.
Yeah. So David, can you explain this? Because this is something I didn't understand about Y2K and what I don't understand about this. What part of the operating system is dependent upon time?
Why Y2K, for the most part, didn't happen.
Not the hard work of a lot of people who were trying to avert...
Right. I mean, if you had something where you were only storing the, you know, last two numbers of the year, then it could screw it up. But that, you know, so like, I don't know if your accounting software did that, you know, maybe all of a sudden you'd be overwriting your records from, you know, from 1900 or something. I don't know. But like. For the most part, like, it wasn't really an issue.
Yeah. I guess I just don't understand it because it's like, it's such a small piece of information to know the current date, you know? Like, it's.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the big thing would be like, if you were doing something where dates met were really important, like, you know, like accounting or. You know, something related to like scheduling or something like that.
There was one
satellite movement,
or like a power generation, the grid, right? Nuclear weapons. There was one guy who got hit with 100 years of late fees from Blockbuster because of Y2K. I remember that being the story. Like, oh, all of this worrying amounted to this. Well, no, all of this worrying amounted to a lot of people doing a lot of work to switch to a four digit. You know, time marker, but
just kick in the bucket.
Yep. That was the movie he got kicked in.
Now it's a 10,000 year problem instead of a 1,000 year problem.
Oh man,
or 100 year problem.
Don't worry, I'm sure the minds will get tired of making calculators by then or whatever.
Mayan calculator. We've had more titles in the past like 3 minutes of us like bullshitting before the close than we did for the entire episode.
This can just be the titles for the next like 3 or 4 episodes.
Yeah, we're just banking them up so we don't have to try next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And side note, did you have any did you have the list?
The list?
I think he decided on one.
Titles? Well, no, I've decided one. We haven't ended the episode yet.
The credits
haven't rolled. Okay, so
this is like waiting for Godot. It's like waiting for Furia.
Yeah. No. So after Ben fired off his Twitter handle, I criticized him, and that led into this riveting discussion.
Well, no, no, there's silence before, because I think, oh, no, wait, no, that was before. Never mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The past 10 minutes are a blur. But remember,
I, like Unix, cannot keep track of time.
So. But remember, the episode doesn't end until I say, and until next time.
And then there's a title.
And then there's a title. And then the credits roll, and then whatever post roll. If I haven't decided on a title, then I say, and until next time, listen for us to deliver. However, I have a title. So do you want me to say it?
Sure.
I don't know. I feel like we should wait for Dennis.
This episode has to end sometime. I need to go to bed. These people, these nice listeners, have to like pay attention to their wives and loved ones. Their children, goddammit.
Well, they're obviously not doing that since they're listening to us.
Well, yeah. I mean, they have better things to do. Okay. Can I do it?
Yeah.
Okay. Do it. And until next time, remember, Molly knew what Molly do.
Good. Good night, everybody. I like that one.
1. I like that one. My suggestion was going to become the chinchilla, but I think I like that one better.
Become as the chinchilla. Cool.
My brain said Molly no. And my heart said Molly yes.
Dungeon Keeper 3.
I don't know why I have such a irrational chip on my shoulder from. I think partially because I disliked Fable so much.
I mean, I think probably part of it's like the repeated overpromising. You know, like it's not just like Valve overpromised, you know, with the original Half-Life, I think, and that came out later, whatever. And then they learned their lesson and never did that with the game again, mm-hmm. You know. But it's like with Peter Molyneux, he does that consistently. And so.
So here's the weird thing, right? Like my biggest like Molyneux goof and the way like the biggest impact he's had on his life. Like, you know, I bought Black and White and had fun with that, like as a weird little toy. I bought the movies, and that's kind of a pretty good, you know, not pretty good, but like a passable like sim kind of thing, like a tycoon kind of game.
Oh, did he make that?
Yeah, yeah. That was Lionhead. For the original Xbox back in the early 2000s, he was hyping this new game he was going to make called BC. Okay. And this wasn't based on the newspaper comic. So it wasn't crazily sexist or anything. But this was like a prehistoric life simulator, right? That, you know, was going to feature brutal prehistoric combat. The world is a weapon, all of these things. And like I wasn't too invested in it, but my uncle was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so since I was the video game guy in our family, every time, you know, I would see him, which, you know, wasn't that frequently, but, you know, a couple times a year, like a handful, let's say 6 times a year, he would ask me, hey, have you read anything about BC? Because he was looking forward to this game, but not enough to like, you know, he wasn't like the kind of guy who would seek out a game magazine to read about this game he was looking forward to. So I had to like, sure. You know, fire back and say, oh, we haven't seen anything about this since, you know, such and such, you know, issue of this. And I would bring the magazine, and like, he wouldn't believe me when it was canceled. Like, no, it's probably going to come out. Like, they've done a lot of work on it, right? Like, Krusty's going to get here. You'll see.
Krusty's coming, you guys.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, yeah. That's my biggest Molyneux goof.
They're making, like, a prehistoric game like that. They showed that at the last Game Awards. They showed a trailer for it. It's, like, a British developer, but it's like, a RTS, but prehistoric times. Might be something different, slightly, but, yeah.
So, has Molyneux made any good games?
You have to stop saying his name like that.
I like it.
I just want to make sure you're doing it on purpose. I'm not trying to make you feel bad.
Molyneux is like, if you can't decide if there are a single or multiple nuclear weapons, it's Molyneux.
Yes, not Polyneux.
Not Polyneux, not Mononuke. Yeah.
Not Polyneux. Yeah. Those would be like... Yeah, India, you know, India movie nukes.
Yes, just say Molly no.
Molly no.
Yes.
Has Molly no made any good games?
Like Populous, Syndicate, the theme hospital games, theme park.
Wait, Syndicate, the cyberpunk game?
Yeah, the old one. The one from like the early 90s.
Yeah.
Dungeon Keeper, like 1 and 2 are really good.
Ah.
Yeah, like he's he made good stuff. Like he had talent back in the day, and I think he's been cashing in on that early success. And like somehow he's established this crazy like Ra's al Ghul like well of credibility that never seems to run out,
and that he doesn't die, doesn't go away.
His career will never die. He just goes away for a little while, retreats into the Lazarus well of credibility, and then crawls out anew with some kind of new project to get people to believe in.
I know. Does he have a project now?
I mean, like, whatever's coming up next, I forget what it is.
He's returned to the Lazarus pits right now.
Yeah. So he left GOTUS behind in order to work on something. But I forget exactly what that is.
I thought theoretically there was a clause that if you didn't actually do the things you promised for Kickstarter, you had to pay back the money.
It's a legal gray area. Whether that's enforceable,
I thought theoretically there was a clause for that.
Yeah, so there was a class action lawsuit like back in 2013 about a Kickstarter that didn't deliver. I forget what precedent it sent, but it caused Kickstarter to amend its terms and services to say that that Kickstarter itself doesn't take any responsibility for projects that don't deliver.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and kind of like tacitly warning any project creator saying, hey, if you don't deliver, you may be exposed to legal risk and compelled to give restitution by a system that is kind of like outside us. Kickstarter is just a social network that acts as a facilitator and takes a cut for kind of like a discovery fee, like that approaches about like 5% or so.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know. I'm often surprised by some of the things that get Kickstarter.
Yeah. It's super goofy. Like it's fun to look at the local section because there's a lot of stuff that has no hope of getting funded.
Oh,
what? It's people who don't know how to play.
Like one of them, like, I've got some contact with some of the people that are doing like trying to revive like the medieval European martial arts, and so like there's like Kickstarters for like translating like ancient German like fight books into English and stuff like that. Like there's some random like niche stuff.
Well, it seems like it's a real mixed bag because like everyone I've talked to who's done a lot of Kickstarters, it seems like half of them don't follow through, you know. Mm-hmm. Like half of them they'll get like maybe a year down the line or a year or two down the line, and then some of them just don't pan out at all. And I don't know.
Yeah, it's I'm borrowing Zach Johnson's point from Video Games Hot Dog here, but it's really difficult for me to put myself in the headspace of somebody who is really, really upset about $10 they spent 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Which, like, on principle, I can understand taking a stand and saying, no, this aggression will not stand, man. Mm-hmm. Like, because if you let that happen, then, you know, like, what if you put in $100 or whatever? But it's just really hard for me to, like, put myself there. I dropped, probably $50 a piece on that new Torment game and on the Dreamfall game, right? Like those are the big Kickstarters that I backed like in that last wave of like 2012. Mm-hmm. I guess Dreamfall is out, so that's my bad for not playing it. But Torment, both of those were like good horses to back. Mm-hmm. And the only other one that I like dropped a substantial amount of money into, the Acherville River movie, the one that they're doing for their that they did for their 2013 album, that hasn't delivered yet, but like they're communicating about it, and I know that I'm going to get a flash drive that looks like an NES cartridge that has the full score of the movie on it, and that's going to be sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was like, whatever, it's a time release thing. You're to an extent you are backing what you want to exist in the world, and that is the way that it ought to be. not a storefront or a way to gin up investor interest by saying, here's a number of our audience that we've already burned through. Will you give us money to find more?
That was like the, Natural Selection 2 kind of, they ended up being successful, but that was like a big thing with them is basically they pretty much tapped into their Kickstarter, almost all of their, all of their core fan base. Mm-hmm. And so it was really a question, like, we're going to break even, like, all of our funding to make this has been taken care of, but is anyone actually going to buy this in addition once we're making a profit?
That's something to consider, right?
Yeah, and like, I'm of the mind, like, I don't think that was necessarily a irresponsible move on their part.
No.
Like, yeah, I think, you know, it's a, you know, risk reward thing.
I mean, did they set their goal high enough that they paid everybody who worked on it? And did they finish what they promised to do? Did they get a product that they can put on a marketplace so that if there is a long tail, they can get it? Like, those are the metrics for success, right?
Right. Do not get all the things where, like, all the stories you hear of, like, people worked on games just not getting paid.
It's the exposure, man.
I've heard a lot of those stories because a lot of people that I work with came from that sort of industry, and it sounds terrible.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like this is awful to say because it's like I'm effectively saying luckily people are abandoning their dreams. But, like, you know, being in the computer science department, like, luckily people are starting to realize that. And so you don't hear about many people that want to become game programmers.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if they do, it's people that are, like, going in with their eyes open.
Yeah.
But, I mean, still, that's like, I don't know. That's, you know, it is one of those things where it's just like that is just simply a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're in it for the money, like, and you have the skills, if you've come out of a semi decent university with, you know, even like a postgraduate degree or whatever, you're going to probably find much more lucrative employment elsewhere. So that is a way to weed the merely interested out from the passionate.
Yeah, although the thing I think that's kind of problematic is that, like, most games are shit. and I don't even mean, like, the more nukes games.
The Molly nukes, yeah.
the Molly no games. You know, or just like, oh, you made, Call of Honor, you know, number 34. I just mean, like, the majority of games are, like, crappy casual games or movie tie-ins. And so it was a thing where, like, I would consider going into the industry if I was sure I was going to at least be working on, like, the Halos or the Half-Life, so, you know, games that I would ever care about.
Yeah, but at that point you're part of a bigger team and a bigger system that is designed to chew through you because there are thousands behind you who are just like you,
right? Exactly.
Effectively, in their eyes. I'm not saying that to diminish anything about you, but like that.
Oh no, I totally know. Yeah, it will be interesting to see if that changes at all.
Yeah, it's very much a supply and demand sort of situation, I feel like.
Yeah. I don't know. Like it's weird because like through these shows I have become acquainted with people who make a living kind of doing their own thing and making the game that they want to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so like that seems very appealing, but yeah, like I have no insight and kind of like no inroads beyond like maybe like Riot or whatever, because there's just some kind of like really weird overlap, you know, professionally and personally between the circles that I run in and people who work for that. Like that would be the biggest, probably the biggest development environment that I have any like real knowledge of. And that is so different as to not be the norm.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I kind of wonder, though, is like the thing about programming is an art or an artisanal skill or something like that. Like, you don't learn programming in college. Truly good programmers are not fungible. You cannot replace them, which makes me wonder some when, all these games are failing or having glitches or stuff like that, if that could be a direct result of kind of the way the industry's run.
Oh, just the fact that they chew through people so quickly?
Right, and the thing that, like, though there aren't actually that many people that truly know how to program.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how much of that is just due to a lack of, like, QA and a deprioritization of kind of making a product that stands on its own?
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm not sure, like, you can QA all you want, but if the person who's doing it doesn't have the skills, they can't fix the problem.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is it's like the worse a company is, the harder it's to tell that they have bad code because the code's so obscured by, you know what I mean? It's not like, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. I need to go to bed, you guys.
I was going to say, this has been a spite-filled episode because I said that we would not talk at all with Dennis not being here, and we've gone long.
No, that's fine.
Instead, we end up just talking about computer science for like half the episode.
As it begins, so it shall end. Be as unto the chinchilla.